Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Brian Przonka. I represent the appellant in this matter, Aaron Morris. This is a due process case. My client was a recipient of unemployment benefits back in 2009, 2010.
Is that issue properly before us because it was not argued? None of the cases were cited below. The argument was fully fleshed out in the appellate brief, but the most that she said below was that you violated my due process rights, and that was all that she said.
Yeah, well, in my experience, a lot of times pro se litigants aren't aware of the niceties of constitutional law.
Well,
I think my client, who was pro se at the time, did have... go on, Your Honor.
We treat pro ses the same legally, and I think that's pretty well ensconced in our black-letter law.
Well, I understand that, and I think at least the appendices to our reply brief lay out the places where she, at the administrative level, did raise the due process concern. No, she did not cite case law. And then she had another attorney in the Superior Court who did not raise the constitutional issue either. So I guess if the court is inclined to rule that she didn't raise it at the administrative level, we would rely on RAP 1.2 and 2.5, which do permit a court to consider, under the circumstances we've cited in the reply brief, to consider constitutional issues for the first time on review. And I think the reason for that is the paramount interest in making sure that our state agencies recognize our citizens' constitutional rights, Your Honor.
But what did they do wrong here from the standpoint of the constitutional standard of due process?
Well, we have a two-pronged attack on that, Your Honor. I think our precedents under the United States Supreme Court, which we have cited in the appellant's brief, the Goldberg case, Matthews, Loudermill, probably their progeny. There's
well,
no requirement.
Provides elaborately for notice to all calculated to give reasonable notice to an applicant or an appellant, as however you want to phrase it, in these contexts of the proceedings and the nature thereof. The notices are hideously drafted, but nevertheless they do contain the language. So what is it that violated due process here under all those cases, all of which I have more than a passing familiarity with? So let's get specific. You want to argue about mountains, let's talk about how high it is.
Okay. Well, in a fraud case before the or an overpayment case before the Employment Security Department, the agency has adopted their own rules, which require them to provide notice. That's all it says. You have to provide notice to the claimant. That was not done in this case. The commissioner made a specific finding, and it's his first finding, that they sent a notice on March 27th, but that it was returned to the agency and that she never received it.
Doesn't mean they didn't provide notice. It's notice reasonably calculated, and it was reasonably calculated.
I don't believe it was, because I think the agency had notice of a new address at that time, Your Honor.
Well, that record doesn't seem to support
it's a little
that.
It's a little bit vague. I don't know. I wasn't there.
A little bit vague doesn't cut it if you want to argue about mountains, i.e. the Constitution.
Well, my argument, Judge, is simply this, that they sent a notice that their own rule requires them to provide, quotes. They know that it was not provided. They had other means by which they could have contacted my client. They could have contacted her by her email address, which remains the same, excuse me, to this day. And they could have gave her a phone call. Hey, what's your address? We have something pending here that we need some help with.
If they'd used email, then we'd have the case as to whether email is permitted as a means of notice. And then that certainly is a way to transcend the specifics of the original notice to the notice that was in fact given. She had actual notice, did she not, at some point, and still failed.
Yes,
the timely appeal.
They reissued the initial notice.
So why do we care?
Well, because the nature of that notice, they didn't reword it. It's ambiguous.
But if she had actual notice, why do we care about the original notice being deficient?
Because the notice was deficient, and the reason it was deficient is simply because it says you have 30 days to appeal this. And your deadline for that is May 7th. Well, she received that notice on July 20th, a month and a half later.
She received actual notice of the proceedings, actual notice of the rules, and was told that she should file a late appeal. So I'm having a little difficulty from the standpoint of due process finding out what's missing here.
What's missing, for one thing, is she was never provided the advice of rights document in a timely manner. They gave her an opportunity to be heard, which
Did
is what's
have
required.
It more than 30 days prior to the expiration of all right, whatever. However, I suppose I'm going to phrase that. Didn't she have the notice of rights or knowledge of the notice of rights, actual knowledge after the fact, but before 6 weeks when she, in fact, filed the appeal?
In the advisement of rights, dated March 23rd, mailed March 27th of 2010, not received by my client, according to her testimony at the hearing, until July 20th of 2010.
But she did receive it on July 20th.
She did, but she was never permitted an opportunity to be heard prior to her the deprivation of her property.
Well, now, that's another argument I'm not aware of here. I mean, the problem isn't the deprivation of property. The problem of due process in this case is whether she received notice, technical or actual. And if she received actual notice and she still failed in a timely manner to take any action with regard to that, then she loses and you don't have a due process claim. So when did the deprivation of property actually occur here? When did they actually take the money?
Well, you obviously disagree with my contention that the notice itself was defective because
of the date. No, I'm going to assume it's defective. But this case, they provided notice, actual, which your client received, and nevertheless, she still waited 6 weeks or 8 weeks in order to file the appeal. I have difficulty with that.
Okay. They gave her the notice. The notice itself says you have 10 days if you want to be heard with respect to tell us your side of the story. A meaningful opportunity to be heard is what's required by the Constitution's 14th Amendment. The agency, despite the notice itself, doesn't say that you can do that after May 7th. They reissued the determination notice. You're done. We're not going to hear from you before we deprive you. All you can do is request a post-deprivation hearing. I think that is contrary to due process, Your Honor. The notice itself...
So she had no opportunity to present evidence to the department?
No, despite her diligent efforts to contact the agency saying, hey, look, I'd like to be heard on this matter. She didn't get any through her informal efforts to obtain information from the agency. They never told her that, well, you have the right to come in and talk to the fraud investigator and have your side of the story heard so that it can be considered. And that is required of the agency to provide every claimant accused of either fraud or an overpayment. They're required to give them that opportunity to be heard. And that's what's contrary to due process in this case.
What did she do with respect to an appeal? And what issues did she raise, if she raised any?
She received the notice on July 20th. She was pro se. The actual references to her constitutional arguments were raised. She said, I have a due process right here. Those are outlined in, I think, Appendix A.
She wanted to present evidence.
She raised the constitutional argument that she hasn't had the opportunity to be heard in her appeal.
Okay. So she raised it?
Yes, in September, belatedly.
All right, good.
And then she also raised it, at the agency level. Why that wasn't renewed in the trial court with Judge Dubuque and the King County Superior Court, I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm the appellate attorney. But I think what we're looking at here is...
a problem.
What's that?
That's another problem.
Well, I don't think it is, because the standard here is we're reviewing the commissioner's decision, not what Judge Dubuque did. And this court sits in just as good of a position as Judge Dubuque to look at this administrative record and make a determination in this case, Judge. I see that I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
You have 3 minutes, everybody.
Thank you, Judge.
True.
Thank you.
Not that it's a big deal this morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is April Benson Bishop. I represent the Employment Security Department. The only issue before this court is whether the department's commissioner correctly concluded that Erin Morris did not demonstrate good cause for her late appeal. After receiving the department's decision, Morris waited 49 days to file an appeal, and she explained under oath she waited that long because she was going through another case with ESD, and she was not sure where to send her appeal. Morris did not properly raise her due process arguments, and she has not shown a manifest error affecting a constitutional right, so the department requests that the court affirm the commissioner's decision.
Can you address the pre-termination argument that counsel made? Would you respond to that?
Yes. So
I know the department's arguing a waiver, but she's saying, well, I never got notice, therefore I couldn't have requested pre-termination.
That's correct. My understanding of counsel's argument is that they believe the department erred in not providing her with an investigatory interview prior to the time that this determination notice was sent out. But under previous case law discussing procedural due process, the party must establish that they've been deprived of notice and an opportunity to be heard prior to a final determination by the department. So the investigatory interview was a very early step in this process. It wasn't a the determination notice sent on April 7th was not a final determination. She would have then, that notice gave her an opportunity to appeal to an ALJ at OEH, which she could then also petition for review to the department's commissioner and then Superior Court and then as of right to this court. So that was a very early step. It wasn't a final determination, so there was no due process violation there. And importantly, she didn't raise that specific issue below, so there's no real facts developed for this court to review in the commissioner's decision since this is the first time she's raising that issue. She did not show good cause for...
The commissioner made his or her decision with or without the presence of the claimant. It wasn't there.
Well, so what happened in this case was the determination notice was issued and Ms. Morris did not respond, so essentially that determination notice became final, which then 60 days later triggered this notice of past due account, which was the first document that Morris actually received, and that's when she called in to figure out what was going on, and the department sent her copies of the other documents.
What do the department's rules say about notice and how it's given?
I believe the rules say that the department must send notice to the claimant's last known address, and that's what they did in this case. They sent it to the address of record and the last one that she had properly filed. Regardless, she did, as Your Honor recognized in talking with appellant's counsel, she did get actual notice then on July 20th. So the significant question here is what happened between the time she received actual notice and then when she decided to file her appeal, which was 7 weeks later.
Let me just be clear, Ms. Bishop. Essentially what the department did is they gave her the benefit of the doubt and used the resend notice date to trigger all other events from there, right? They didn't ding her for the prior because they recognized she never got them. They just accepted that, right?
Well, they gave her an opportunity to have a hearing about the whole situation. So the department has to assume that the previous deadline was correct, that the May 7th deadline was correct, because only an ALJ or the commissioner can make that determination of whether, when she did file a late appeal, of whether she had good cause. But then the ALJ in this case and the commissioner both recognized, okay, she didn't get actual notice until July 20th, but that was a decision that those triers of fact had to make, not just department staff. They said, okay, no actual notice until that date, so then we're going to measure your delay from that date of actual notice. And that was July 20th, and then she waited 49 more days to file her appeal.
No challenge to the findings either, right?
From the department's perspective?
No.
Well, that's correct. And they didn't challenge the ALJ's factual findings, which were adopted by the commissioner, and so this court should accept them as verities on appeal. Importantly, I'm sorry, I'm out of time.
That's fine.
We would ask that the court affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you,
counsel. Thank you. I'd just like to address a few things in reply. First of all, we think that the relative agency regulation governing the notice to overpayment claimants is WAC 192.220.110. The states has disagreed in their briefing. They've cited a couple other WACs that we think apply only to claims. This matter, the claim before the court is arose after my client was no longer making claims. And so the relevant WAC provides that they have to provide her with notice. I think if we look at the two parties' positions with respect to the WAC provisions, I think it's pretty clear that the ESD knows how to draft provisions where they can send things to the last known address if they want to. I think it's pretty clear that they know, that the agency themselves know, that they need to provide more than that, because a fraud investigation can open up 3 years after someone's closed their claim. And I think they need to make some effort to comport with due process, to notify people, to provide them with notice and their opportunity to be heard before they take action to deprive somebody of their benefits. And their property and their liberty interests, I think, is at stake in this case because of my client's reputation. We believe that there is a constitutional right to have some type of pre-deprivation process, which is not provided in this case. My client didn't receive any. The record is clear on that. My client never did get a hearing on the merits. That's what she asked for. We respectfully ask the court to reverse the Superior Court and the Commissioner's decision, remand it to the agency to give my client an opportunity to be heard, and we're also asking for an order requiring the agency to disgorge all of the money that they've collected from her during the pendency of this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.